Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 31st day of July, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Andy Schaefer will join us a bit later in the program to look at the agricultural cash grain markets near Everly, Iowa. That's up on the Minnesota border, just 20 miles south of it or so, to the north and the west of just dead center of the state. And we'll also take up the weather forecast that with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey. Prairie Research Institute will also check in on the agricultural news for the afternoon and hear about the USB United Soybean Board's beginning of their See for Yourself tour on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago at the CME Group today, futures in the corn pit finished 2.25 cents lower at $3.71 for the September contract, December down 2.5 at $3.81 and a quarter, and the March corn at $3.92 down 2.75 cents, May of next year down 2.75 cents, July down 2.75 cents of next year. It's actually one of the few that's trading above $4. It's at $4.03 and a half, and December of next year at $3.95 and a quarter is now down 2.5 cents. August soybeans at $9.80 and 3 quarters, 9.5 cents lower for the day. September down 11 and a quarter at $9.53 and a quarter. November beans, $9.40 and a quarter of a cent, down 9 and 3 quarters. January, $9.45 and 3 quarters, 9.5 cents lower. The March at $9.44 and a quarter, down 9 cents. And July at $9.43 and a half, down 9 and a quarter. Bean meal on the day, down $2.50 at $3.54.60. Bean oil, 30 cents lower at $29.98. September soft red winter wheat up 2 and 3 quarters. Next year is July, down a penny and 3 quarters. It settled $5.17. The hard red in the September lead option at $4.92 and a quarter, up 1 and a quarter. July unchanged at $5.43 and a half for 2016. Live cattle futures from the CME Group finished the August at $1.22 and a half higher, $146.45 for the day. August feeders at $2.11.47 and a half, up 25 cents, and August lean hogs down $1.15. The final trade is $78.52 and a half cents. Actually, they're still trading, so that's the last trade. More in just a moment.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Checking some of the outside markets at this hour. In the energies, August ethanol at $1.50 and 2 tenths, a tenth of a cent higher for the day. Crude oil at $46.90 a barrel, $1.62 lower. The price of a gallon of gasoline on the wholesale, RBOB, at $1.83 and 8 cents, is up a penny for the day. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.58 and a half, that's down a penny and 2 cents. Natural gas on the afternoon at $2.71 and 4 cents, down 5 and 4 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now 74 points lower at 17,615, and the U.S. dollar down 0.244 at 97.44. Gold futures are currently trading at $1,097.25 at troy ounce. That's up $8.85. The national weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says we'll see some isolated showers. Those will come after 2 in the afternoon. Mostly sunny skies otherwise. A high of 88 degrees tonight, clear with a low of 63 on a west wind at 5 to 8 miles an hour. Sunny skies tomorrow at 87. With that west wind at 5 to 11, gusting to 15. And Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low of 65 degrees. Sunday, a 30% chance of rainfall, partly sunny and 84 degrees. And on Sunday evening, more showers, partly sunny, or rather partly cloudy overnight with a 68-degree low. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll check in with Jim Angel and Drew Lerner.
support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is July the 31st, the very last trading day of the month, and a Friday afternoon. That means we'll talk with Mike Zuzalome. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Mike, thank you so much for being with us. Did you take a look at the monthly charts, and can you give me an idea of how they settled up in the agricultural commodities?
Yeah, December corn down about 12%, Todd. November beans down 9%, and December wheat tracking, as we talked about this morning, very closely with crude oil down 19%. And we noticed that crude oil resumed its fall very late in the trading session for grains. And between that and the Chinese soybean cancellations reported before this morning's opening, we never recovered psychologically. And so we were destined, it seemed as though, to keep that pressure on all the way through the end of the month of July. So we have now broken with 2010 at this point for now anyway, as far as how we've closed out this month of July and taking out the lows from June versus, or close to the lows from June versus how we looked in 2010 in the month of July versus June.
Yeah, so the difference being here that the trade apparently believes the crop size is better this time around than it was back then.
Well, I think that, but I think it goes back to those outside markets. You know, I'm going to say something that is probably going to be hard at first to get, because I had a hard time getting my mind around it to say it, but if I took away the macro supply demand fundamentals, the Chinese stock market and Greece, the things that bothered me back when we were up at 435 and something that made me wonder whether I should get more hedges on and get them in place or not. But if I took those two things away at the end of this month, given the improving export demand, given the discount that the market now has in the prices, I actually feel as good about the grains as I did before the June rally. And I think it's really odd for me to say that given how bad these charts looked at the end of the month and how we have diverged from 2010. But I felt as though the protein side of the equation really came into focus. The research I've done about China would suggest there's less worries about this spilling over into their overall economy, especially their consumption for food and protein. And so I feel as though maybe we'll stay weaker going into the August 12th report, or at least until we see some of these pre-estimates by the news wires. But I feel as though supply demand wise on the micro level, we've got one of the best opportunities coming up here.
I suppose, and let me think about this, because my guess is that you feel as if you remove those from the marketplace, that the trade simply has removed all or most of the risk that maybe it should still have in the market out of the commodity markets. Is that right? And it would be production risk.
Exactly right. It's all been about investment demand for me the last 9 months or so. And that investment demand has always had me nervous and had me very reluctant to want to buy into the supply side of the market in June. And now that we've experienced the break because of this investment demand being worked out of the prices, I'll give you, for instance, we're only $15 a barrel away from 2001, 2002 price levels in crude oil in New York. We're around $30 a barrel away from the 2001 low of $16.70 a barrel. Yet we have almost next to no similarities in terms of deflationary pressure that we had back then. But the investment community has traded it that way. So these lower prices in grains, especially in the livestock, I think have encouraged the actual demand. So that's why I'm more optimistic.
Yeah, so going forward, how do you talk to your clients about this marketplace? Because they'll, at this point, really be scared about the market and what they might see when they get to harvest.
Well, that is partially true, but I can tell you east of the Mississippi, I've already had conversations with clients about this. And east of the Mississippi, Todd, I don't think any of the clients are really eager to sell, except maybe unless you're in like Douglas County, Illinois. or still over in Sangamon County in parts. Very few of the clients want to sell much more than 100 bushels of corn at this point and are essentially going to rely upon crop insurance heading into the harvest because they just can't get a bead on their actual fill at this stage of the game and during pollination. They're more excited or willing to go after bean hedges, and that's probably where I'll focus after the August 12th report because I think, simply put, now that wheat has gotten to this price level and we're competitive with France and we're now getting competitive with Ukraine, it's really going to be beans that take the corn down another level if we go down another level. So I'll refocus my attention on beans after the August 12th report as far as getting ramped back up from 50 to 55% hedged at early levels up to, you know, 100% of insured bushels. But in the corn, very few producers east of the Mississippi are fighting or wanting to do much as far as hedging at these price levels.
Yesterday, we recorded Commodity Week that will air on many of our radio stations here in another 15 minutes or so, and tomorrow morning on some of them as well. We touched tangentially on the August 12 report, so I'd like to take it up a bit more at this time. And the idea, I suppose, since you're talking about soybeans, of what the acreage might really look like, have you thought very much about how that acreage might change? If it does change, what happens to the marketplace?
Yeah, in fact, I'm glad you brought that up because we did get some estimates out this afternoon from Doan Advisory. And the acres that I'm going to be using are probably 83.5 on planted bean acres, 82.6 on harvested acres. So essentially 1.1 million less harvested acres on beans because of what we went through this spring and the lack of double crop bean planting after the soft red wheat came off and is still coming off. That puts me at a 250 carryover using a 43.2 bushel yield. Doan came out with 44.2 in their estimates today against USDA's 46. As for corn, we are identical in yield estimate, 163.3 for both me and for Doan. I'm going to stick with like an 81.1 harvested acreage number, million acres on corn at the 163.3 yield would put us at a carryover, a production level of 13.24, carryover below 1.4 billion bushels if we don't lose too much demand. Do I think USDA is going to do that in August 12th? I doubt it. But I think there's historical and statistical reason why they may not want to raise the yield. And I think that would actually do a lot of good to the trade as far as the trade pricing in probably a bigger yield in both corn and beans than what USDA is carrying right now.
So let me reiterate some of those numbers. You're at a 250 carryout for the 2015-16 marketing year, or that crop that'll be harvested. July, USDA was at 425 on the carryout, and you are now at a corn carryout for next, not this fall, but the following one, somewhere below 1.4, and we're currently right at 1.6 from USDA. So those are substantially different numbers and I suppose give you a bullish bent.
Well, they certainly give me a confidence in the undervalue level that we are now in corn, and we're only about 30 cents away from in the soybeans. And that's an undervalue level that goes all the way through harvest because these are, after all, expectations for harvest. I think one last thing that probably helped me this week immensely was to see quite a bit of weather problems in a lot of key growing regions of Asia, of the Ukraine, Baltic states, and Western Europe, and I think that will do us some good. May not cut production a lot, but it will stem the tide of continuing to see this supply increase after supply increase, and that's probably the biggest thing that I'll be watching for on the report. Does USDA break with its trend and actually do some forecasting out for some of these potential production problems and lower some of the supply? And that would include Ukrainian corn and Chinese corn at this point.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us. We'll talk with you next week.
Have a great weekend.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzalo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. A couple of items in today's agricultural news. The National Corn Growers Association says it is disappointed that Congress failed to pass a long-term highway funding bill before it recessed. Congress voted to extend the United States Highway Trust Fund's authorization through October the 29th, the second such short-term extension this year. According to USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service, 80% of the domestic corn crop is trucked to market. NCGA President Chip Bowling, who is also a farmer, says farmers rely on the nation's infrastructure system every day, and they need safe, reliable roads and bridges to get their products to market. America's transportation deficiency, he says, will cost U.S. agriculture about $1.3 billion in exports by 2020. Let's move elsewhere in Washington, D.C., where USDA officials have told Congress they will stockpile commercial vaccine to combat avian flu that could return this fall after devastating poultry flocks in 21 states this past spring and summer. APHIS and ARS officials told House Ag Livestock members research continues on a high-path avian flu vaccine, but commercial vaccine will be stockpiled for a possible fall outbreak. APHIS Deputy Administrator for Veterinary Services, John Clifford.
We will have vaccine availability in our stockpile for the migration period. There are several companies, actually, besides the research that they're doing, there are several companies that have vaccines that they're prepared to have available.
But some lawmakers question how effective those vaccines will be while research is continuing. Clifford suggested they would be the most effective to date. He stressed other precautions, especially on-farm biosecurity and monitoring of wild birds that spread disease, will be needed, along with culling livestock as quickly and humanely as possible. 48 million chickens and turkeys died or were culled in 21 states, and millions of dollars lost and spent in the most recent outbreak, almost $200 million in payments to producers, and hundreds of millions more on vaccine research. Clifford says APHIS is hiring hundreds more health technicians and veterinarians, but it may not be enough.
It is a limiting factor. In other words, how many people we can get trained and ready by the fall within USDA APHIS Veterinary Services. We're probably, in a worst-case scenario, we're going to be needing probably 10 response teams to prepare for a worst-case scenario, and maybe even more.
The Deputy Administrator for Veterinarian Services for APHIS, John Clifford, says planning is underway for a worst-case scenario in the fall. And even though he doesn't expect it, he says USDA will be ready as the nation recovers from its worst animal health emergency in history. Couple of other quick items. Trade secret theft charges against a Chinese national were dropped this week in federal court in the Southern District of Iowa. The Chinese national was charged with conspiring to steal trade secrets, corn germplasm, belonging to DuPont, Pioneer, and Monsanto. Ultimately, the court found the evidence to be entirely inadmissible, granted a defense motion to exclude, and soon after dismissed the case at the government's request. And finally today, independent oil refiners and a former White House official have urged U.S. regulators to tweak the U.S. biofuels program to shift responsibility for complying from refiners to fuel blenders, according to public comments on a government proposal for renewable fuel use. Delta Airlines, Monroe Energy LLC, Carlyle Group's Philadelphia Energy Solutions, and Valero Energy Corporation, along with Ronald Minsk, who recently served as a special assistant to President Barack Obama, are among those pressing the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to make the change. It is not a new position for the merchant refiners, but it represents fresh pressure on EPA to reconsider a key, if esoteric, part of the RFS that they say could have broader impacts on renewable fuel use. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Visit us online at willag.org. Up next, the United Soybean Board is out on its See for Yourself tour. Our thanks go to Jim Dewey of WKAN Radio out of Kankakee, Illinois, a member of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, for this following story. Jim writes that the United Soybean Board See for Yourself tour is underway and that the tour started yesterday with a luncheon for all the participants. One of the hot topics, he says, discussed at lunch was the possibility of using soybeans as a cover crop. Then a short time later, the group learned that crop insurance providers would indeed allow that to happen. United Soybean Board farm director and soybean grower from Illinois, Doug Winter, likes the idea.
The first thing that came to mind when we were talking about this is that the use of treated soybean seed is always a disposal problem for carryover excess seed in that area. So I think it'd be a great use for that. And it's also going to make a great cover crop. Naturally, you're going to gain some nitrogen attribution to the soil so that it would carry over well. So I think it's going to be a great idea.
Winter called it a win-win situation.
I would think it'd be a great way to be environmentally responsible way to be able to dispose of these seeds and plus, you know, getting the cover crop advantages from an erosion standpoint and from what it would do for soil health, and that's along those lines.
The group later toured the DuPont Nutrition and Health Facility in St. Louis. The See for Yourself tour next heads to Shanghai, China, where the group will visit a nearby farm and see a presentation on China's animal and feed and utilization before heading to a Shanghai feed mill. Our thanks to Jim Dewey at WKAN Radio out of Kankakee, Illinois, for that story. Usually on a Friday afternoon, we talk with Andy Schaefer at the Anderson's Everly, Iowa facility. I checked in with him just a few moments ago. He is in Kansas City and not available this afternoon. That's okay. I've got a couple of other items I'd like to go through with you because the calendar is beginning to fill up, and I haven't talked about what's happening in the month of August, but it will be a busy one for myself and willag.org. The first item actually is on the 13th day of the month, and this is in some of the counties that are nearby here, including Macon County. On the 13th day of August at 7 a.m., we'll be along with the Macon County Extension Office in their building there in Decatur. Dale Durkles and Kathy Ekstrand, who is with Stuart Peterson, will help put on a program called Grain Marketing in Challenging Times. Doug Gooker is in charge of that one. You do need to register for it, and it's repeated in Macon County and Piatt County. That one starts in the afternoon at 4 p.m. in Piatt County, at 10:30 in the morning in DeWitt County. So if you want to catch up on that one, you can call your local extension office, but you do need to get registered for that event. That's called Grain Marketing in Challenging Times. We'll be busy with some Will Ag Outlook panels the following week. We'll be on the 19th in Watseka, Illinois. And before that, we'll be over at the Illinois State Fairgrounds on Monday and Tuesday, the 17th and 18th. So you can come and see us. We'll be in the pork patio during our closing market report live from there. Agronomy Day, of course, is that same week. So Monday and Tuesday, the 17th and 18th. State Fair on the 19th in Watseka for an evening event for Will Ag Panel. You can find that on our Ag calendars link at willag.org. And then Agronomy Day starts at 7 a.m. here on the Urbana-Champaign campus on the 20th of August. So it's really busy week. Those are just some of the things that are happening with WILL and the agricultural programming. Find all of that at willag.org. You'll find the USDA report numbers there as well, and I'll try to get those updated with next week. Some of the early forecasts for what that August 12th event will be showing to you potentially.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Raspberry Cake Day. In medieval Europe, wild raspberries were considered medicinal. When settlers from Europe arrived in America, they found the natives already eating and drying berries. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first U.S. patent was granted to Samuel Hopkins of Vermont. The patent was for a process for producing potash and pearl ashes. Potash was used in soap and fertilizer. Pearl ashes were used in baking. It produced carbon dioxide gas in dough used in the first quick breads. By the way, the patent was signed by President George Washington. In 1859, Theobald Smith was born. An American microbiologist, he linked Texas cattle fever with a parasite spread by blood-sucking ticks. In 1921, there were reports that it rained frogs in Sterling, Connecticut. And in 1923, Stephanie Kwolek was born. An American chemist, she created a new high-performance fiber, a liquid polymer that, after being spun, was five times stronger than steel with half the density of fiberglass. Kevlar today is used to make, among other things, rope, gloves, and building materials. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Find our agricultural programming online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's check the weather forecast now first with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute.
As we wrap up July, we ended up about 1.5 degrees below average. The heat at the end of the month could not quite overcome the cool stretches we had throughout the month. The statewide rainfall was 5.2 inches, which is about 50% above average. However, it was unevenly distributed. Amounts of 8 to 10 inches were seen in wide areas around Kankakee and Quincy, as well as south of Carbondale. There were a few dry areas in the state. The northwest corner was dry, as was a large area on either side of Interstate 57 between Champaign and Marion. Everybody else was wet or slightly above average. According to the National Weather Service, highs on Saturday and Sunday will range from the low 80s in northern Illinois to the upper 80s and low 90s in southern Illinois. There is a moderate chance of rain on Sunday across the state. It'll be probably hit-and-miss affair, with places getting an inch while other places getting a sprinkle, typical for early August. Right now, nighttime lows will be in the low 60s in the north to the mid to upper 60s in the south during the weekend. And it will be less humid as we move into next week, with dew points in the 60s. Monday will still be warm like the weekend, but it will start to cool off again on Tuesday and Wednesday, with highs in the 70s in the north to the upper 80s in the south. And there's another chance of rain on Wednesday. The longer range forecast for next weekend is for both cooler and wetter conditions.
That's Illinois State Climatologist Jim Angel. Let's take a bit broader view across the Midwest and the growing regions in the United States. Now here's Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated.
Most of the Midwest we're going to be encountering relatively good conditions. There's a lot of chatter out there today about the eastern Midwest becoming too dry. And indeed, there is going to be a drying tendency out there across some of the area from Michigan southward into Ohio and Indiana. Rainfall in those areas is just not likely to be very impressive as we move forward through the coming week. There will be a cool front, though, that will cut across parts of the Midwest at midweek next week, actually early to midweek. And that will likely stimulate at least a little bit of shower and thunderstorm activity. A lot will depend on the orientation of a ridge of high pressure further to the west to determine just how much rain may or may not fall in the eastern parts of the Midwest. But some shower activity will occur, and that will help to briefly slow down the drying tendency. But once we're in the cool air, we're probably going to see additional days of dry, biased conditions across parts of the eastern Midwest. The frontal boundary may not come back all the way through the eastern parts of the Midwest as a warm front, and if it doesn't, that will likely leave all of the significant rainfall in the western Corn Belt. And that would occur in the latter part of next week and into the following weekend. Do we believe that there's going to be hot, dry weather for an extended period of time? Probably not. But we do think that the rainfall frequency and intensity is probably going to be a little bit below average for a while. And that's going to lead to some drying across the region. There will be some potential for a little bit of crop stress. But as far as a serious decline in production because of this situation, I would doubt that will evolve, at least not for a while.
Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Find us at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.